Welcome to this message on South Haven's podcast from South Haven Church with the purpose of inviting people to find hope in Jesus Christ. Hi, I'm Mike, and I'm inviting you to check us out at southhavenchurch.org. This message and other messages can be found on our website or on our South Haven Church app for iOS and Android. And now for a message of hope.
God bless you. Thank you.
I do get that question oftentimes. I do get the question of why or how could you possibly leave Branson? I mean, you've got the lakes, you've got the shopping, you've got the golf, you've got Silver Dollar City. I mean, how could you leave a place like that? And really, the answer is kind of simple. I felt a calling to pursue helping churches and helping individuals really make their money count for something more than just happens on this earth. In fact, the foundation does two things. One, we help churches with their finances. We help churches think through with financial strategy design so that they can do ministry both today, tomorrow, and in 10,000 tomorrows. We help churches with church loans, short-term investments, CDs, and then long-term investment and endowments as well. So that's one side of what we do. And then we also work with individuals who are interested in doing a couple of things with their money. For one, to make sure they have an estate plan so that when they pass from this life to the next, that their resources go exactly where they want them to go. And estate planning is with wills and powers of attorney and sometimes even trusts. Now, when I talk about that, usually the younger people's eyes begin to glaze over on that because they think it really doesn't amount to them or doesn't apply to them. But actually, if you have children and you care what happens to them after you pass, then you want to have a good estate plan. Otherwise, the state of Missouri has a plan for you, for your children, and they do a wonderful job with our taxes, and so I'm sure they would do great with your kids as well. But if you've got any desires, then you need to have that written down in a legal manner, and we can help you do that. We also help individuals with their giving. There are certain ways that you can give that are more advantageous to you based on our tax codes than others. And then also, we want to help people think about the possibility through their gifts of a lifetime stream of income. You can actually give something away and get a return on that giving. And then most of all, we want to help people make a lasting impact. In fact, we want to make sure one of our goals is to have every Missouri Baptist with an estate plan that remembers ministry in some way, shape, form, or fashion. My first couple of weeks in the job, I passed out a scholarship to Lexa. And Lexa was a student at Southwest Baptist University. And so I go, excuse me, and I take my picture with her, handing her the check, smiling cheesy. You know how that goes, right? And I'm handing her the Mary Gibbs Scholarship. And I had no idea who Mary Gibbs was. And so I went back to the office. I looked up Mary Gibbs and come to discover that Mary Gibbs, when she passed away, left some money so that students could go to college. What's interesting to me is that Mary Gibbs died in 1921. So almost 100 years later, her gift is still sending students to college. And so that's what I get to do, is I travel and I help. And if there's any way that we can help you, I'd be happy to talk to you. But most of all, I'm really a pastor, and our purpose is to advance the gospel, to make sure that everybody hears about the message of Jesus Christ, and to encourage us all. So if you've got a Bible this morning, we're going to be in Luke chapter 19. Luke chapter 19. It's going to be a familiar story for some of you if you have been in church. And it's going to remind you, well, let me just read it to you and we'll pick up the story. Luke chapter 19, I happen to use the ESV translation, so if yours is slightly different, that's maybe the reason for that. But Luke chapter 19, it says this: He, being Jesus, entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and he was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was, but on the account of the crowd, he could not, because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for Jesus was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to that place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today. So Zacchaeus hurried and came down and received him joyfully. And when the crowd, saw it, they all grumbled, saying, He has gone in to be the guest of a man who is a sinner. And Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I will restore it fourfold. And Jesus said, today, salvation has come to this house, since he is also a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. Have you ever been overlooked? I mean, you're there and you can see yourself and you assume everybody else can see you, but the person who gets the choice to decide whether you get the promotion or whether you make the team or you get to be promoted or you get to have any of those things, that person somehow doesn't see you. Have you ever been there? I've been shopping sometimes and I've got money in my pocket. I'm ready to buy something and I can't find anyone to wait on me. Or maybe you were in line for this next job. I mean, it's clear that you're the person who's supposed to take that. You've been there for years and years and years, and they bring in some new person from the outside and they promote that person over you. Or the coach doesn't put your name on the list and you don't make the team, or you don't get to have the lead part in the great musicale that's there. Or maybe it's even those grandchildren who never say thank you. They don't Instagram or Facebook or tweet anything their admiration for you of what you have done. And you stand there sometimes and you go, does no one see me? Because here I am and I'm obviously and should be seen. That's pretty bad, isn't it? It stinks, really. But what's worse is when it feels like that God doesn't see you. Maybe you've taken a job and a promotion and you've moved and now it doesn't seem like God is there anymore. Or you've stepped out in faith in some way or some shape or fashion. Or maybe you were going to retire and now either finances or health are not there. And you begin to wonder, Lord, what happened? Where are you? Do you not see me anymore? Lord, I feel like I'm always in the shadows. Lord, I'm always by myself. Lord, aren't you going to do anything about this? Well, the good news is, if you've ever been there, you're not alone being there, though you're alone while you're being there in the loneliness, maybe. But there are story after story in the Old Testament of people who feel like God has abandoned them, that God doesn't see them anymore. Remember the story of Abram? God comes to Abram and says, hey, I'm going to make you a great nation of people. All you've got to do is to leave everything you know and to go to some place I'm not telling you where you're going. And oh, by the way, you don't have any children. And yet, Abram obeys. And it's week after week, month after month, year after decade that he has no children. And there comes a point in life where you're now hoping she no longer becomes pregnant, right? There's that line at some point. And yet God miraculously shows up and gives him a son, only for then God to ask Abraham to sacrifice his son. Or consider the story of Joseph. You remember the story of Joseph, right? He has this great dream, and the dream is that everyone in the world is going to bow down to him. So he gathers his brothers around and informs his brothers, and they're not really excited about that particular dream, are they? In fact, they take him and throw him in the bottom of a pit, and I can't imagine Joseph at the bottom of the pit going, Lord, is this how they're bowing down over me as they look over me into the pit? Is that the way the dream was supposed to go? That wasn't what I was envisioning. And then, of course, you know, he gets elevated and taken to town, sold off, literally, and he gets this job in this guy's house, and the woman really likes Joseph, and so he says no to her, and she rewards his faithfulness by sending him to jail, and then he goes to jail, and then he gets to be in charge of all the jailers, and all he asks for one of the guys who gets out of the jail after he tells the dream, he just asks one of those guys, would you remember me when you get out? And, of course, he's forgotten. Or worse than this, imagine that some people are coming to your house and they're going to declare one of the children king or queen or president or whatever it is, and instead of inviting you to be shown off, your parents send you away out to the farm to take care of the sheep. Story in the Old Testament tells us of people like that. God is on milk, and maybe that's your reading right now. But it's in the story of Zacchaeus that I think we discover what God is always looking for in a person. Now, we're not going to try to manipulate God. Many preachers out there try to tell you that if you do this or if you do that, then God has to do this. And usually it involves sending them some money somehow before God responds to you. I'm not talking about trying to get God to do something. I'm trying to talk to you about what you need to become so that you become what God is looking for. And it's all found in the story. Now, what's interesting is this story we typically think of as a children's story, do we not? I mean, because of all the Bible characters, we know about Zacchaeus because Zacchaeus was a wee little man. And if that's not bad enough, we repeat that. And a wee little man was he. Now, I don't know about you or not, but I know of no man alive who would like to be referred to as a wee little man. Not even our leprechaun friends think that's a positive comment about them, right? In fact, in heaven, Zacchaeus is going, great, they know me, but they're singing that song again. He loves summertime, I imagine, in heaven. But there's something else that we know about Zacchaeus. Not only was Zacchaeus, you know, vertically challenged, I suppose you might say, but he was also rich. What's interesting is how he became rich. He became rich because he became a tax gatherer. Now, in those days, tax gatherers, those who worked for the IRS, if you will, are not as well thought of as we think of them today, correct? In these days, no one liked tax gatherers. In fact, tax gatherers were those who sold out their friends in order to get the most tax money for the Romans. And so from this, we know that not only has Zacchaeus had a rough time because he's not really tall, and there are advantages to being tall, are there not? I don't know that, but I've read about people who are tall. It looks like they have some advantages. But there's also some value of being rich. So we know that not only is he having to overcome his lack of height, there must be something so broken in his life that he is willing to go to work for the bad guys, willing to tax his friends, to be a rat to them, to be a tattletale on them, because he is so enamored by money that he's willing to walk away from all of his friendships, all of his relationships, all of the acceptance of his own people, because he thinks that if he's able to make money, then people will like him and that he'll be okay. There's a problem with that, though, right? It's a lie that gets told to us that we repeat to ourselves. We keep thinking that if we just make a little bit more money, then we'll be okay. Those of us who make $25,000 in the room know that you can't really live off $25,000, but if you had $50,000 a year, then you'd be fine. But those who have $50,000 know that, no, you can't be fine at $50,000. It must take at least $100,000. And those in the room who make $100,000 go, no, there's no way you can live off that. You've got to have $250,000. And it goes on and on and on. And you and I are able to tell ourselves that lie. Zacchaeus has come to the point, though, that he can't. He knows that money doesn't buy what he's needing. It doesn't fix the brokenness. It doesn't fix the damage in who he is. You know, our society likes to tell us that if we just had more money, we'll be fine. That's why the lottery is so popular. That if we just win the lottery, we'll be okay. But you know as well as I do that the lottery is just a tax on people who can't do math. That's really all it is. That's what Dave Ramsey says, at least. But here's the thing about Zacchaeus. He thought this was going to make him popular, but he's come to discover that it makes him an outcast among his people. Well, maybe then he thought that it was going to make him popular among the Romans, those that he's working for. But do you know what the Romans think of him? They think that he's a sellout to his own people, so they don't want to have anything to do with him either. And so here's this short guy who's rich but has no friends, and what he thought was going to be fixed by money is not fixed. And it's even worse than that. Now even, or at least he's been taught, that even God doesn't like him. See, because he's a tax gatherer for the Romans, he's not welcome in the church. He's not welcome in the temple. He's working for the bad guys. He's working for those that are trying to set apart God's people. And so now his own people don't like him. The people he's trying to impress don't like him, and the church won't even receive him. And we find him in chapter 19 in a desperate situation. But he hears about someone. He hears about this new preacher that's all of a sudden kind of risen to position and authority and power. This new guy named Jesus who's now traveling around. And this Jesus, from everything that Zacchaeus has heard, is talking like somebody who actually knows God. This is someone who actually knows what they're talking about. Have you ever listened to somebody who doesn't know what they're talking about, though they think they do, but then someone comes in the room who actually knows what they're talking about, and you go, aha. Well, that's what Zacchaeus is feeling about this guy named Jesus. He's talking about God as if he knows them, knows him. And more than that, that this Jesus guy may actually like tax collectors. In fact, Zacchaeus discovers that one of Jesus' leadership team, one of his inner circle, happens to be a tax collector himself. And so Zacchaeus, the thing that's been broken, the thing that's been dead in his life, begins to come alive a little bit as he thinks, well, maybe this Jesus guy can help fix what's broken. I may look like I'm okay on the outside, look like I've got it all together, but maybe this Jesus can fix what nobody else can see that is broken. And then the most amazing thing happens. Zacchaeus hears that this Jesus is coming to his town. Now, I know we live in the greater Kansas City area right now, and so you have all kind of popular people come into the KC Metro, right? But imagine if your hero, the one that you want to see, the one that you want to hear from, is coming to Belton. And you get all excited about that. Maybe it's your hero, maybe it's, I don't know, it's Bill Gaither, maybe, or something, and Bill Gaither's coming to have a concert here. Or maybe it's your other hero, Justin Bieber, and so you hear that Justin Bieber's coming to town, and so you get so excited that he's coming to town, and you can't wait to see him. He's coming to Belton, and you get excited, and then you show up to get tickets, and the crowd is too big. That's what happens to Zacchaeus. He hears that this Jesus is coming to town, but when he shows up to town, everybody's lined up the streets to kind of get a glimpse of him. And by the time he gets there, the crowd is like two or three people deep. Have you ever tried to go to Silver Dollar City when they got that Christmas parade and people are right there on the line? Or maybe you've gone to Disney World and they got that big line of whatever it is, and there's two or three people, and if you're short, you really can't see anything. And so Zacchaeus thinks that he's going to do what you and I would do, and that's kind of push our way through, right? Isn't that what we do? Except if you're a tax gatherer, last thing you want to do is to expose your back to all those utensils people might have that they want to drive into yours. And so he says, well, I can't do that. What can I do? And then he decides, you know what I can do? I can run ahead of the crowd so that I can see. Now, here's what's interesting. In those days, men did not run. Men just didn't run. That was not sophisticated. First off, you had that girding your loins whole bit because you're wearing that long tunic, and who can run in one of those? And so you're not going to run like that, and then it's kind of unsophisticated. But this guy, who all he cared about is what people thought about him, the position of power that he might have, at this point he doesn't care, and he takes off running. And then he does this crazy thing. He climbs up into a tree. That's what you do when you're a kid. Adults don't climb trees. I mean, if you're driving around town and you see the mayor and he's in a tree, or maybe you're driving around town and you see your pastor in a tree, call 911 for the brother, okay? Something's gone wrong. Because adults don't just climb trees, and yet there's Zacchaeus has climbed this tree because he wants to see Jesus. Now, we don't know if Zacchaeus did this exactly or not, but I have a tendency to think that Zacchaeus is like I am, that he's kind of a second guesser about decisions in life. Are there any second guessers in here? You kind of decide, no, I'm not going to, yes, I'm not. Anybody like, if you're trying to decide, then you are a second guesser. Let me just let you know that. Am I a second guesser? No, I'm not. Yes, you are. Because as he climbs that tree, he realizes that time changes when you're waiting on a parade. Does it not? When you're waiting for the fire truck to show up, isn't that the longest amount of time in history to wait on the parade to show up? And so I imagine Zacchaeus climbing the tree going, what in the world am I doing climbing the tree? I'm the richest guy in town. I'm not going to climb a tree. I can't do this. And I can see him climbing down. And then he kind of steps away and goes, but there's no place else to go. There's no one else that I think that can help me. And so he climbs back up that tree. And then he looks around and goes, this is so dumb. And then he climbs down the tree. And then he climbs up the tree. And then just about the time he's about to walk away, that crowd does that crowd kind of thing. You know, it's kind of that restless noise that begins to happen, you know. It happens if you get here early at church and you're one of the first two or three people here, and then the rest of the people gather. There's this noise, there's this excitement. And so Zacchaeus is in his tree, and he's looking down the road to see when Jesus is coming. And he waits and he waits, and the noise gets louder and louder. And then I don't know if it's some of the lower level disciples come out and they kind of clear the crowd out. I don't know how this works or not. But at some point, after they clear out, he gets a view of Jesus. He can see Jesus. And I don't know if Jesus is high-fiving people or fist-bumping or what he's doing. But as he's walking through the crowd, Zacchaeus begins to think that Jesus is looking at him. And we'd go, of course he is. You're in a tree. And Jesus is walking through going, who's the guy in the tree? What's wrong with him? But with every step that Jesus takes, Zacchaeus becomes convinced that Jesus is looking at him. Not in one of those kind of intercepted waves. Have you ever done that? You're waving at somebody, and you think they're waving at you, but they're not waving at you. They're waving at that person, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's good, right, yeah, no problem. Right? But it really seems like that Jesus is looking at him, and though Jesus is talking to the crowd and he's touching hands and high-fiving and stuff, it still looks like that he's got that gaze upon Zacchaeus. And with every step that Jesus takes, Zacchaeus, his heart gets just a little more excited. It beats just a little bit faster until Zacchaeus sees Jesus coming to the tree. And then he hears the most amazing thing. Jesus says the word, the name Zacchaeus. Research says that's one of the most nicest things we ever get to hear is someone calling our name. We like to hear our name being, well, unless we're asleep in algebra class, okay, outside of that. But most of the time, to hear somebody call our name, it's the sweetest thing that we could possibly hear. And Zacchaeus, who has not heard anybody say anything nice about him in who knows how long, hears this calm, kind, sweet voice, non-judgmental, that says, Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus is going, how does he know my name? I mean, imagine Bill Gaither in line comes, hey, so-and-so, and calls your name. How exciting would that be? You remember Lightning McQueen, Lightning McQueen? Hey, he knows my name. Lightning McQueen knows my name. Remember that scene? Zacchaeus is looking around for a name tag. He can't find one. And then Jesus goes on to say, Zacchaeus, come down. I'm coming over to your house. No one ever wants to go to Zacchaeus' house. Even though it's the nicest one in town, no one wants to be there. And by the way, this is not Jesus trying to go to the rich guy's house for lunch. This is not what's going on. If Jesus was hungry, he takes some stones, turns them into bread. That's what he does. What Jesus is trying to convey to Zacchaeus is he wants a relationship with Zacchaeus, that Zacchaeus, you're no longer overlooked. In fact, the scripture says that he was passing by this town. But he sees Zacchaeus and says, Zacchaeus, I want to have a relationship with you. And something happens in Zacchaeus. Zacchaeus changes in that moment. How do we know that he changes? Well, the first thing he does is he receives him, the scripture says, joyfully. Now, I don't know about you, but if I invited myself over to your house for lunch today, you may not be joyous about that, would you? You're thinking, oh, I've got nothing to cook. And I've got towels in the floor, and nothing's dusted, and the grass hasn't been mowed. And you would think about all those things. Do you remember the day when you used to have a formal living room in your house? Anybody have a formal living room? You kept it clean. You didn't do anything in there, because when guests came over, you barricaded yourself and made them stay in that room because you didn't want to see how you really lived back there. You know what I'm talking about, right? You stay here. This is what we look like. We don't look like this back here. That's just a mistake. No. You stay here. But Zacchaeus feels like it is no burden to receive Jesus and to invite him into his house. And he does this so joyfully that he gets a little excited about this, because when the crowd says, you don't want to go to that guy's house, he's a thief, he works for the bad guys, he steals stuff, Zacchaeus doesn't deny it. Zacchaeus says, I'm so happy right now that money doesn't matter. In fact, I'll give away half my stuff. Anybody feeling that good today? Yeah, I didn't think so. Okay. But Zacchaeus says, I'm willing to give half my stuff away, and if I have defrauded anybody, then I'll not just restore it, I'll not just double it, I won't just triple it, I will fourfold it in response. Now, this is fascinating to me, because in Luke chapter 18, there's a story of a guy who wants eternal life, and he goes to Jesus and asks, what is the price of that? And Jesus says, sell all that you have. And the guy walks away because he had much. Here, Jesus makes no mention of money. He makes no mention of being a tax gatherer. He makes no mention of being a problem. And yet Zacchaeus willfully, joyfully gives half of it away. Spent his entire life trying to get there and become somebody, and now he's willing to give it all away. Why? Because he has now moved to the moment of surrender. Have you moved to the moment of surrender? You see, oftentimes in church, we hear that we're a sinner, and if we really think about it, we know that we are. And we'll go sometimes saying, oh, Lord, I'm a messed up person. Oh, I'm bad, and I know I'm not helpful. I know I'm not good. And that's okay in a sense because that's a step that leads us to the next step. But the real step that Jesus is looking for is not that step. He's looking for surrender to say, Lord, whatever that you want. And Jesus says the most amazing thing. He says this tax gatherer is a son of Abraham. The salvation has come to his home. What happened to Zacchaeus? Well, I know this. The guy who went up in the tree is not the same guy who came down from that tree. He was changed because what was broken in him, he finally found a solution for, and he found it in Jesus Christ. Because Jesus is always looking for the person who is willing to say yes today. He's always willing for the person not so much concerned about your past. In fact, Jesus doesn't really care about your past. He just cares about your future. And he comes to this town and he finds somebody who's broken enough not just to say that they're a sinner, but to be converted, to surrender. I am one of the most blessed men in all the world. I have a beautiful wife that's supportive of me. I have two wonderful boys that are amazing. And I am just simply tall, dark, and handsome, right? But one of the most incredible things that I get to do is that I have a family member that on occasion will take us, my wife and I, on a cruise. And here's what's amazing. He will pay for our cruise. And it's not just an everyday, no offense, it's not just an everyday normal cruise. This is a cruise line called Crystal Cruises. Now, if you've never heard of Crystal Cruises, there's a reason for that. That's because they don't let people like you and I on their cruise ship normally. That's what it is. It's a 5-star, 6-star kind of thing. There are 900 cruisers and there's 600 crew to take care of the 900 of us on the cruise ship. It's got the largest square footage per person on a cruise line, and there are times on the ocean that I'm on the cruise ship and I look around and I see no one else on a cruise ship. That's a little disconcerting when you're on the middle of an ocean and you don't know how to drive the boat that you're on. A little concerning. But what's even more amazing is that these cruises are not just down to the Caribbean and back, though that is wonderful and I'd be happy to go. But these are like significant cruises. Our first cruise was like from L.A. to Miami. Think about how you do that. L.A. to Miami. Next cruise was around the Baltic Sea and seeing all those things. Last year, it was 13 days around New Zealand on a cruise. And next week, it's on the Danube. I don't even know where that is, but I'm going. I'm fine with that, right? On the Danube cruise. I'll sing the song, something about the Danube. And it's all paid for. What's even more amazing, though, is that when he pays for that for us to go, he flies us business class. Now, I never really got to fly any business class because they always pull that curtain between me and them, so I never know what goes on over there. But let me tell you what happens on the other side of that curtain. On the other side of that curtain, they treat you like a human being. Very surprising. Never happened to me before on a cruise, on an airline. But they say, Mr. Franks, we're so glad that you're here today. And I'm thinking, well, you should be because you ought to be glad that I'm here. Here's your menu. Would you like this? Would you like that? We'll even stop the plane if we don't have what you would like because we are thinking that you're that valuable. In fact, the year before last, we flew on a plane, and it was a 17-hour flight. And I was frustrated when we stopped because I missed being treated like that on that plane. It was awesome. They come out, and they lay your seat down all the way flat. And this kind of blew my mind. In business class on this particular airline, they pass out pajamas for you to change into. Can you imagine that? They change in pajamas. Now, I'm from South Arkansas. And I look around, and I'm like, I'm not wearing my pajamas in front of anybody because we don't do that. We don't wear our pajamas out and about in public unless we're going to Walmart. And then but this was not a Walmart occasion, so I'm not going to put on pajamas in front of everybody else. And then a few minutes later, I look around, and everybody's wearing their pajamas. So I go put my pajamas on. And there we are in business class, all sitting in our PJs, looking at each other. And they come in and they put a bed mattress on my chair so that I'm comfy. It's just wrong. It's just wrong how people do that. And here's how I find out about my next invitation on a cruise. This person sends me an email. And on this email, all it says is, thinking about this cruise, and then it's got a hyperlink, the little blue link that takes me to the cruise, and it says, would you like to go? And I get this occasionally, and every time I get that email, I have the same response. I hit reply, Y-E-S, send. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know when I'm going. I don't know for how long I'm going to be gone. I don't know if I've got to sell my children to get there or quit my job. I don't know. I don't sell my children. I rent them for those 2 weeks when I'm gone. I always get them back. It's fine. In fact, I've got notifications on this iPad device and my phone that if that notification were to come in today, I would stop the sermon and I would hit reply, Y-E-S, send. My record is 38 seconds from the time it hit my email box to the time that I sent my reply. I'm not missing that. And all Jesus wants from you every day is yes. That's all he's looking for. Every morning that we wake up, we go, Lord, yes. I don't know what you're going to ask of me, but Lord, I say yes because I know it's going to be great and it's going to be wonderful. Oh, it may not be comfortable. I may have to make some adjustments and it may not be so much fun all the time, but I say yes because I know that you're going to be there and you're going to be there with me and it's going to be a great grand adventure and I'm going to be okay no matter what. So we wake up and we say, yes, Lord. And the Lord goes, okay, good. Here's the day. It's going to be plain average day. You're going to get up. Going to brush your teeth, going to go to your job, going to go to work, go to school, whatever it is, you're going to do those things, and then you're going to come back home. And you're like, yes, Lord, sounds great to me, I'm in. And then one morning you're going to wake up and you're going to go, yes, Lord, what do you want me to do? And it's like, well, hey, today the doctor's going to say it's cancer. Or, hey, something, there's going to be an accident today, and it's just not going to go really good, or maybe they're going to walk out on you today, or maybe the boss is going to say you're fired. It's going to be really bad this day. And you know what we do as followers of Jesus Christ? We go, yes, Lord. Because it's not about comfort, it's not about stuff, it's not about position, not about power. It's about relationship with the one who created us, for he can only fix the thing that's broken in us, and that's our sinfulness. And he fixes that by dying on the cross for you and offering to exchange your sinfulness for his perfection and to spend the rest of your days walking with you through whatever it is that he asks you to walk in. Some of you have never said, there could be somebody in this room who's never said yes to Jesus. You think this is just kind of weird religion kind of thing, strange kind of people, but today the Lord is tugging on your heart just like he tugged on the heart of Zacchaeus for you to say yes. Or maybe you're in some situation, in some kind of circumstances that you don't like at all right now, and you're kind of frustrated with God about why he led you into this position, why he's allowing this. May I remind you that Zacchaeus joyfully received the Lord, because it's in some of our most difficult times that we receive more of Christ and develop a relationship that we can't develop any other way. I say yes to that email that I get for a cruise every time. And I invite you to say yes to Jesus today, for his adventure with you is far beyond anything this life can provide you. Would you bow your heads and close your eyes this morning? I don't know where you are.
Thanks for listening to our message from South Haven Church. If something from this message stuck out to you, you have a question or need prayer, please email our South Haven pastoral leaders at hope@southhavenchurch.org. South Haven Church exists for the purpose of inviting people to find hope in Jesus Christ. You can find us on the web at southhavenchurch.org or join us in person at our main campus located at 16,800 Bellray Boulevard in Belton, Missouri. Till next time.